Peter B. Collins. News and comment. It is May 1st, Wednesday, 2013. Americans love to be watched. In fact, surveillance is more popular than ever. As we warm you up with a tune from Rockwell, this was produced by the late Michael Jackson. No coverage here of the wrongful death suit. You'll have to go to TMZ.
I'm just an average man with an average life. I work from 9 to 5. Hey, hell, I pay the price. All I want is to be left alone in my average home. But why do I always feel like I'm in the twilight zone? And I always feel like somebody's watching me.
And I like it. One week after the Boston Marathon attack, pollsters for the New York Times CBS poll went into the field and found that 78% of respondents say surveillance cameras are a good idea. 9 out of 10 people polled say Americans will have to live with the risk of terrorism and that this is a worthwhile trade-off. 41% say that they have lingering questions about the role of the nation's intelligence agencies before the bombing in Boston. 45% say they had not. And tomorrow, we will release an exclusive interview with investigative reporter Dave Lindorf regarding the questions that linger about the role of a company called Kraft International. They supply security officers, or mercenaries, as some people call them, and they are responsible for the black SUV that arrived at the finish line of the Boston Marathon just seconds or minutes before the bombs exploded. And we're going to explore the questions that remain, not peddling any conspiracy theories, just offering the kind of skeptical reporting that Americans deserve. The case has left an impression on the public. 53% of those polled say that the two brothers Tsarnaev had links to a larger terrorist group. Now, according to the official reports to date, that is not true. But, of course, when you have Fox News and the right-wing radio shows drilling it into people, well, it does have an impact. 32% believe the official account that the two brothers acted alone. And here's something that is stunning. 66% of those polled said information about how to make explosives should not be allowed on the Internet. And that's the kind of censorship that a police state can prompt people to embrace. And I find that quite frightening. Only 20% say they believe the government has gone too far in restricting civil liberties in the fight against terrorism. 26% says it hasn't gone far enough. And about half, 49%, say the balance is just right. And this is very disappointing. It's not surprising to me. But so far, beyond 9/11, too many people are comfortable with the new normal. That cops are everywhere. They can stop you and under the Patriot Act demand all kinds of documentation. They can examine your bank and library records without your knowledge or permission. And they can intercept our telephone calls and other electronic communications at will. I find that deeply frightening and, frankly, quite un-American. Interesting editorial reaction to President Obama's news conference, where I praised his commentary yesterday for the argument to close Guantanamo Bay prison in Cuba. And the reaction is strong and justified. In my San Francisco Chronicle, which leans conservative, they said, "Nice words, Mr. President, but the White House needs to deliver more than just words." The editorial acknowledges that Congress has been part of the problem in relocating innocent men from Guantanamo, but it adds that Obama has too easily accepted the position from Congress. And they go on, "Well said, Mr. President. Now it's time to deliver on such thoughts by launching a major effort to clean up a human rights and constitutional mess that's been tolerated for too long. It's time for Obama to move toward shuttering the prison and the concept of indefinite detention without due process. Well, good for you, San Francisco Chronicle. And here's the New York Times. They also praised the words of the president and noted the hunger strike that is underway there. They quote their own reporter, Charlie Savage, and I will say that Savage was interviewed on the public television news hour on Tuesday evening, and he did an excellent job of recapping the issues at Guantanamo and, for example, pointing out that the president has had the option to use a waiver process to release men from Guantanamo since 2012 and has not used it once. And for a corporate media reporter, I give Charlie Savage due credit for honestly and fairly reporting these issues. My only quibble is with the public television news hour that it took the prompting of the question from Ed Plant of CBS. Is that his name? Plant? Bill Plant. I'm sorry, Bill. Bill Plant. And also the hunger strike with these more than 100 men putting their lives on the line to communicate with the American people in the only available method. And I just think, as you know, we've been reporting on the hunger strike since February, and the corporate media is really just catching up now. So the New York Times editorial says virtually all inmates at Guantanamo have never been charged with any crime and never will be. Nearly 90, the number's 86, have been cleared for release, and another large group can never be tried because they were tortured or there is no evidence that they were involved in a particular attack. Only six are facing active charges before a military tribunal. And the New York Times points out that the ACLU has made two important proposals, and they endorse these ideas. One is to appoint a senior White House official to be the point person for the administration's Guantanamo closure policy, and so that it's directed by the White House and not by Pentagon bureaucrats. And they also point out that the president could order Secretary of Defense Hagel to start providing legally required waivers to transfer detainees who have been cleared. And even the arch-conservative Democrat, my Senator Dianne Feinstein, chair of the Senate Intelligence Committee, has urged Obama to urgently review the status of those prisoners. And so we need to keep the pressure on. And I hope you will keep commenting on this, write letters, make phone calls to your elected representatives, because the only way we will see a move in the direction of justice is if we keep demanding it. Because when you put it in the context of the poll that I just shared with you, most politicians in Washington say, just a bunch of lefty civil liberties activists care about Guantanamo. I'm going to stick with the safe position of denying these people their constitutional or human rights, and we'll just live with the discomfort because, losing an election could be even worse. Meanwhile, three new individuals, all 19 years of age, all male, have been arrested and charged with assisting in the aftermath of the Boston Marathon bombings, assisting Dzhokhar Tsarnaev. And they are friends of his who were classmates, by all accounts, and they have been accused by the FBI of destroying evidence in the case. They went to a dorm room of Tsarnaev, and they apparently took a laptop computer and a backpack containing fireworks and destroyed them. Their attorneys say that these three men had no knowledge of the Boston Marathon bombing itself and simply responded to a request from a friend for help, not knowing what the implications would be. Well, Obama made an announcement today that seals the prospect that there will be no meaningful media reform in his second term. He has appointed a telecom industry lobbyist, Tom Wheeler, not just to be a commissioner at the FCC, but to chair the Federal Communications Commission. Wheeler is a venture capital investor, a friend of Obama's. He has the dubious honor of being a member of the cable television and the wireless telephone industry's Hall of Fames. And that means that he will certainly represent their interests over the public at the Federal Communications Commission. And Obama praised the private and public sector history of Mr. Wheeler. He was one of the leaders of a company that helped create thousands of good high-tech jobs. He's in charge of the group that advises the FCC on the latest technology issues. What bullshit. He lobbies the FCC to benefit the wireless and cable industries. So this is deeply disappointing. And Tom Wheeler is not going to push for net neutrality. He's not going to reform the regulation of radio and television stations to require diversity of viewpoints. That was a fundamental part of the 1966 Deregulation Telecom Act that has been ignored ever since. And so it goes. Corporate Democrats rewarding corporate cronies and big donors. And fortunately, a guy who cares a lot about media reform and who has been active in the movement, Democratic Congressman Ed Markey of Massachusetts, is likely to be the next senator replacing John Kerry from the Commonwealth of Massachusetts. He won the primary defeating Congressman Stephen Lynch on Tuesday, and he's got a cakewalk against a former Navy SEAL who has never served in public office, who won the Republican primary, a man named Gabriel Gomez. So it looks like Ed Markey is on track to be the next senator from Massachusetts. And when you put him together with Elizabeth Warren, at least on domestic and economic issues, that's a pretty powerful pair. Here in the San Francisco Bay Area, the Bay Area Rapid Transit subway system has been no friend to free speech rights. It was just a couple of years ago that they turned off cell service in one of the busiest underground stations in downtown San Francisco to prevent protesters from using their phones to coordinate an action there. And now, under a new state law, cops for BART and other transit systems can issue bus and subway bans for unruly passengers, including those who might simply have used their First Amendment rights to protest. Under the recently passed State Assembly Bill 716, BART can issue prohibition orders to any passenger cited or arrested for certain offenses, essentially blacklisting some people from boarding public transit if they've been charged with certain crimes. And it clearly can be applied to protesters who have been arrested during free speech activities. This is a very chilling effort, and I'm sorry to report it from right in my own backyard. Also here in California, I quite frequently comment on the state of affairs in the California prison system. And as you know, because the medical care for California prisoners has been so miserable, the state prison system has been under the purview of a federal court and a receiver named Clark Kelso, appointed by the judge in the case. And in the past few months, there's been a skirmish as Governor Jerry Brown has demanded that California retain or that control of the prisons be returned to the state. He says, "We've spent billions of dollars on prisoner health care. The problem is fixed, and we want the federal government out of here." Well, there is a new medical crisis in the prison system, and it's called Valley Fever. In the past 7 years, 62 prisoners have died from Valley Fever in California prisons. Valley Fever is a fungal infection caused by inhaling spores from infected soil. It's prevalent in the southern San Joaquin Valley. So Clark Kelso, responding to this, has ordered the state to move large numbers of prisoners, as many as 3,300, from two prisons, the Avenal State Prison and Pleasant Valley State Prison. And he's saying that about 40% of a total of 8,300 inmates at the two prisons are vulnerable to this highly infectious and deadly disease and need to be transferred to other prisons. And the state says, we can't do that. We're trying to comply with the federal court order to reduce the overall population, and we wouldn't have room for these guys. So this is going to be a very interesting picture and a struggle that will probably continue the receivership of California prisons for many years. And it's notable that 70% of those who have died in five of the last 7 years from Valley Fever, they are all African American. And so this is not only a very serious legal issue, but it has racial implications as well. I am not a big fan of charter schools, but I don't have a, you know, just an across-the-board opposition to them. I think in some cases, they do provide, in a last resort, a way for parents to remove their children from failing schools. But in Oakland, across the bay from me, we have very serious problems. Poverty, unemployment, high levels of gun violence, and the schools are terrible. And so, over the last few years, the Indian Model Schools were set up in Oakland, American Indian Model Schools is the full name, and just this week, their charter has been canceled by the Alameda County Board of Education. They have run through millions of dollars, almost $4 million of it that benefited the former director of this American Indian Model Schools, Ben Chavis, and his wife. And by all accounts, the academics have been a real improvement over what is offered in the Oakland public schools. But the lack of oversight of these charter schools run for profit is a very serious problem. And it's one of the reasons why I have been uncomfortable with charter schools in general. We've got an ailing nuclear facility here in California called San Onofre. There are two reactors there. They've been shut down for over a year. And now a local television station on the Central Coast has released a picture that was taken inside the generating station showing that when leaks developed from a pipe in the cooling system, they used plastic bags, masking tape, not even duct tape, masking tape, and broomsticks to try to plug the leak. And at the same time, a San Onofre safety engineer has gone public saying that there's something grossly wrong at the San Onofre twin reactor facility, and he said that these reactors should not be restarted. And to that I say, amen. And finally today, I often read letters to the editor, and only occasionally do I share them with you. But in response to the perceived hypocrisy in Washington over the Senate's blocking of even watered-down background checks for gun owners, a guy from Oakland named Mark Vicknes wrote this letter to the San Francisco Chronicle. He says, "Those who cherish our constitutional right to bear arms have no apparent concern for one of the most foundational principles of our democracy, that laws pass by a majority vote." He's referring to the obstructionism of the filibuster. "Second Amendment enthusiasts are content to have an arcane Senate rule utilized to fundamentally alter our system of democracy when doing so results in the defeat of any restriction on the purchase of guns. To hear conservative pundits over the last month or so, one marvels at the hypocrisy. While they oppose background checks on gun purchases in defense of the Second Amendment, they support hidden surveillance in American mosques in violation of the Fourth Amendment. They rail against telling the Boston Marathon bomber of his right to remain silent in violation of the Fifth Amendment. They demand he be considered an enemy combatant and subjected to waterboarding in violation of the Eighth Amendment, and insist he be tried in a military tribunal in Guantanamo, also in violation of the Fifth Amendment." He closes with the simple statement, "We are drowning in hypocrisy." And no life vests are readily available, friends. Better learn to swim in the sea of hypocrisy. Thanks for listening today. I remain Peter B. Collins.
Happy trails to you until we meet again. Happy trails to you. Keep smiling.